Sanity Right and beginning of Debbie's report after supper. Sunday, the 4th of November, 73, on Speaking French. Channel 2 Right and beginning of Debbie's report after supper. Sunday, 4th of November, 73, on Speaking French. Channel 2 Right, beginning of Debbie's report after supper. This Sunday after supper, the 4th of November, 73, on Speaking French.
Bread under one arm, and they take one bottle under the other, and they just go out all day. You know, it is idyllic. It's just, yeah. It's a beautiful thing, and she loved that time, and I suppose that's why she still has this great.
Well, Tracy has a voice. I just turned on the digger there. Just give it again.
Well, she talked to me about when she taught in France.
No, that's Katie and Katie Osborne and
Phoebe.
And
both
Phoebe.
Of them. But see, Phoebe. Well, Katie went back when she was 22 or 23.
I'm sorry, at the beginning. I just turned on.
Katie and Phoebe both went when they were 12 or 13, 12, about that age. Now, Phoebe just went to, she was sent to a school. She and her sister were sent to a school in Switzerland.
She and her sister?
And then her brother. All of them. They
all
just
of them.
Packed them up and sent them to Switzerland.
Three children.
And that night.
You know, the funny, the really odd thing is, I lived 1 year at Duke with a girl whose family did exactly the same thing. They packed up her and her two brothers and sent them to school in Switzerland for a year when they were 12 or 13.
Yeah. That's the ideal time.
And you know, I thought it's exactly the same thing that Phoebe's family did.
Guy used to say to my sister Fanny, the thing to do with your children is when they're 12, send them to school in Switzerland. That's what he'd say, tell her.
Hmm.
Well,
I forgot that.
Over and over, you said that's the only time to send them.
Yeah, and it's and with my friend Marnie, the same thing happened as with Katie. She studied French all the way along. I mean, she just spoke French, and so it was no trouble to her to study French. I mean, school was never anything to her. She just spoke French.
Yeah.
And she got, you know, she just sort of breezed through Duke on her French that she learned when she was 12. But Katie went back when she was, I don't know, she was out of college, so she was 22, 23, and taught for a year. And it was pretty grim. I mean, French schools are grim. They really are. Phoebe's recollections of that Swiss school are grim. They're stern with kids, you know. And Katie's recollections of the Lycée are pretty grim, too, and they sort of got locked in at night. And I can't really remember what she used to tell us about the soup. Somehow they ate the same soup three times a day. Something. I don't know. I don't remember it well enough. But still, when she talks about it, it's sort of, I was saying to Faye, it's sort of like an idyllic time to her. You know, she said we used to get on bicycles and we'd get a loaf of French bread under one arm and we'd get a wine bottle under the other and we'd just take off all day. And that, you know, it's, of course it's beautiful. That's, you know, that's why she still likes France. And another thing that she had that was she had somebody sort of to show her where to go in France. She had Henriette, that's this woman that was in Nice, which is the reason that we went to Nice, was that this old friend of hers from school was there. Well, this woman was, she was considerably older than Katie, and she was one of the administrators in the school. I think she was like the business manager of the school. It must have been a private school, or else this is just one of the functions in a French school is somebody to run the books. And anyway, this is what Henriette did, and she was a real stickler about pronunciation in French. Katie said, you know, I stayed a year in France, and Henriette never told me once that I said anything right in French. So I was just expecting, I wasn't sure quite what I was expecting when we went to call on her. I thought, well, maybe she's a little bit of a dragon lady, you know, and then she's a French functionaire, and we all know what they're like, sort of, you know, that she was really going to be kind of tough. Well, she wasn't.
Does that mean official?
Yes. She wasn't at all. She was just the most alive, humorful person I've ever seen. She really had a sense of humor. We went on Epiphany Day, and on Epiphany in France, you have this special cake that you eat, and it's got prizes in it. It's supposed to be a game for children. You know, you eat the piece of cake, and if you find the prize, you get to keep the prize, and there's a special prize. There's a little crown in the cake. It's called the Cake of the King. And if you get the piece of cake that has the crown in it, the Cake of the King is sitting on a paper crown. And if you get the plastic crown that's in the cake, you get to take the crown and crown a king. Well, you're the king, and you get to crown your consort. And then you get all sorts of wishes. Now, well, it's supposed to be for children. You know, they get their wishes granted with this. Well, she had one of these cakes for us, and that's what we did for tea, was we ate this cake. And it was a child's game, you know, but we were all so excited to see what our prize was going to be in our piece of cake. And here we were. Oh, yeah, it was probably 75 or 80, and we were all just sitting around trying not to eat our cake too fast. Trying not to act too excited about it, but we all were. And she, you know, it's her humor about it. She was excited about it. It was showing us a French custom. I'm sure that's how she thought of it, but we all took it as a game. And I thought, afterwards, I thought, well, Katie's time in that lycée wasn't all grim. It wasn't all the same soup three times a day. I mean, they must have really had a lot of fun, she and Henriette, because this woman really had a sense of humor, I thought.
So it's easy to get these stern impressions.
Yeah.
And you actually went out to see Henriette.
Just that one time.
Yeah.
We went. She's retired now, and is it the Legion of Honor that's in France? They get a little red thing. They get a little red badge that they all wear. I think it's called the Legion of Honor. I don't remember. But she, anyway, is that, and it's very prestigious, and she always wears it, you know, because she was apparently very good at whatever, you know, whatever her job was with this school. She was real good at it. But I thought that, too, is another reason that Katie doesn't look at her learning the language the way that people today, you know, these college students that go today look at it, which is pretty sour. They don't go with any kind of, well, I didn't really see that many of them. There was a group at the University of Nice, and they were all pretty sour all the time about everything that was French. And they lived in their own section of the dormitory, and that was it. You know, they sort of did their duty in the school. They'd go to their classes, but they didn't seem to be enjoying anything. And most of all, they didn't seem to be enjoying what they were doing, learning French.
Now, were they in the year abroad?
I would think, yes. It was a group from the University of somewhere, I don't know, Kansas or someplace like that. And they had a professor in residence and the whole thing. But, see, the school that I went to wasn't really it was vaguely somehow connected with the university. I don't know how, really. But it's a separate school just to teach foreigners in France how to speak French.
Yeah.
And so there weren't really that many Americans in our school because they didn't cater to junior years abroad. the university did that. They were just people who, say, had moved to Nice and wanted to learn how to speak French. There were a lot of people like that. And then students from all over Europe who would come just to learn French.
And Madame Pullman.
Mm-hmm. She was my favorite. She did. Really despaired of us and told us so every day.
She's the one who said you'd never speak.
Yeah, she said never get my vowels right. Never. And she seemed to have a better time at it than any of the rest of them. Our other, we had a couple of lectures a week, and they... French, you know, French schoolrooms are kind of grim. Room that we had all our classes in one big room, and there was a stage across one end, with right in the middle of it, a desk, and then a blackboard behind it, and then benches. We sat on benches, and then the bench in front of you had a little shelf on the back, and you could write on that if you needed to write things down. And they had guards at the door that would sort of lock you in after you got into the classroom. They had three uniformed guards who would watch the clocks, and they'd let you out for break, and then they'd shut you in when you were supposed to be in class. And if you came after the doors had been shut, you couldn't go in. Those are the front doors. You had to go way around the back and sneak in the back way and sort of slink into one of the back benches because you just weren't supposed to be late to class. By George. And they'd come in, these uniformed men would come in and wash the blackboard between each class. They'd go up and wash the blackboard, and then they'd straighten the chairs, and then they'd go out again and shut the doors behind them when they went out. And they didn't do anything. They just sat at their table. They had a little table in the foyer, and they sat there. And if anybody came in and needed to have a question answered, well, then they could answer the question, and then they could let out the classes. But there was just our classroom on the first floor, and that's all they did. They didn't go upstairs to let any classes out upstairs. There were the law school had some classes upstairs, and they didn't have anything to do at all with the law school. Just us, and three men in uniform. It's sort of military.
Well, what you saw through Katie Ogden then was right nice, was right rich.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't know her before you got over there.
No. I'd met her, but I didn't know her.
Just met her.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the reason you stayed as a Dalrobia.
Oh, because of Katie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She lived in that area when she came when she was 12, and they'd stayed in this big pension with. And all I can remember that she ever said about it was that it had potted palms in the foyer. And we started out staying. Henriette got us rooms at this hotel that was probably all right with me. I mean, I thought it was a fine hotel, but it had really small rooms, and Katie didn't want to stay there because she wanted, she really wanted to be somewhere that was like the place she'd been when she was 12. She wanted to be in a similar situation, and so a similar kind of place. So she and Jim, her husband, went out and found the Dalrobia, and we moved there. And that was a little more like what she lived in,
so you
what
had
she remembered.
Her to thank for that.
Yes. Had her and Henriette to thank for Nice. We wouldn't have gone to Nice otherwise.
Yes. And then you worked with her that whole month that you were there.
Just about. We used to go down and have lessons in the it was sort of like a little lounge downstairs.
French?
French. She She gave me lessons. Well, what she was trying to do was to tell me things that people whose first language is English find difficult about speaking French, which she would know because she'd done it so much. You know, she's speaking French for so long. And then she had some books, too. She had a lot of textbooks. Well, not a lot, but a couple textbooks with her that we worked with. Which was really good because I didn't know anything. I had 3 years of French in college, and I could hardly conjugate a verb, much less say anything. I can remember thinking that.
You mean you started off almost from scratch?
Oh, yes. And you know, when you look at all I had, I mean, I had 9 terms of French, 9 courses. 6 courses. 3. Ugh. Just don't learn very much.
But now, you had been associated with Phoebe, but you didn't have any association with her in French until, using French until you got there.
That's right. She'd talked to me about when she was in school in France and the times that she'd been to France. She'd been quite a lot to France, but I hadn't. She can speak French. I mean, she was the one that spoke when we first got there. I'd open my mouth and my mind would just be blank. I forget, we walked into the hotel in Paris when we got there. And we had to ask for the key to the room. And so we both were trying, you know, to figure out. We knew the words, but to get them in the right order and say them sort of vaguely the way they were supposed to be said. And I can remember that. Oh, I came to know it so well, that little frown, you know, and the head kind of turned like this. I don't understand a word you're saying. And finally, he said, "Would you please ask it in English?" He spoke better English than we did.
Yes.
Oh dear, that was so funny. We didn't. We didn't have to worry too much.
Well, she had talked about it and all. And now what your father does, what experiences he had.
I don't know how often he's been to France. He spent quite a bit of time, in Europe. He had a job as a tutor, and he traveled around with a family. I think in the 30s.
And he told you about that?
He hasn't very much, no. But he just has. He has a real feeling for people being able to speak other languages, and he just thinks it's really important. And I've just always heard that.
And French is his choice.
French was mine. That's what I'd had in college.
Yes.
And I'd had 3 years of French already.
He didn't care.
Seems kind of silly not to make it be French. Although, when I look at it now, I could as easily have started off in Italian or Russian as French.
But you still haven't accounted, Debbie, for that bright face you had when you left here about the prospects of speaking French.
I don't know what it. I suppose I was. I think it's that you think you're gonna. I guess what I thought was that being an American was awfully dull, and if I if I spoke French, then that would make me just a little bit European, and then I wouldn't...
You mean that Christmas?
That Christmas, and then I wouldn't be quite such a dull American.
You could sort of escape it.
Uh-huh. Sort of, well, that's what happens when you travel. You don't have any responsibilities, really. You know, you just kind of leave everything behind, and you just have one sack over your shoulder or something, and you don't... It lifts you out of the ordinary. I said that in that thing I wrote. It make it... You're not dull and humdrum anymore. And I suppose that's what I thought, that I would no longer ever be dull and humdrum if I went to France.
Well, now, you had the experience traveling, but on your other travels, you hadn't used the language.
We spoke a little bit of Greek, but not much, and we we always said that we should, too, when we were there.
Yeah.
That we should... I mean, I think if you stay any length of time anywhere and you don't speak the language, it becomes apparent that you should speak the language if you're going to get anywhere.
So here, how long did you know ahead of time that you were going?
Oh, practically, I don't know.
Whole fall,
a couple months. We planned it.
Well, so it happens. See, they just built it up in the mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you'd say, well, here, it's the dream has come true.
It could be anywhere, you know. You could be going to Timbuktu for 4 months or however long, and you'd be excited about it. But it's not necessarily that it's France. It's just anywhere that you go for a long time.
Travel and the language.
Uh-huh. It's just the two of them together.
Well, I don't believe that comes out exactly in anything, any of the sketches you did. Just that sense of expectation. You don't recapture that or try to. I think that's one of the nice things. And now let me tell you, in your letters, you say a number of times that you can talk to these people and be understood, and that's a great distinction. That's the way you put it in your letters.
I thought so. I thought a lot of myself because I could speak French.
She thought a lot of herself.
I mean, I thought it was really something. I still do.
Well, that's more like it. That's more like it. But now, you haven't... That's not in any of these pieces. You see, that's almost the heart of the matter, and it's not touched on. You see, you could do it after the thing's over, you can do it and say how you felt at that time and just be puffed up in anything you want to be, see, with no suspicion of pride or being puffed up. You're just recapturing your former attitude.
The most puffed up I was when I went to Normandy, because by then I could speak with a lot of sort of current expressions and slang and things like that, and I could even do all the little expressions like saying "oui" and drawing in your breath instead of pushing out. And I really thought I was something because I could do all that. And they told me I was. See.
That's the one thing that I see. That's the very first time Faye has come out.
Uh-huh.
Look how honest they are. And now that is the one thing.
Well, I see we got just a little touch of that when you your feather in your cap in your letter. after all those weeks of not being able to speak, and your teacher telling you you'd never speak, and you were a little disgusted, and your letters were sort of grim about it, and you wondered why you ever thought you were going to speak French.
That's right.
And
that,
they were pretty grim.
That is a fine touch. That is one of the nice touches. I'd forgotten about that.
And
you remember that?
I had a look at those letters.
Oh, marvelous. Letters to us that you wrote to us. And then came this letter, you
were through at that
and
place.
And you had the highest grade, and you had a feather, and you could speak. Oh, it was a glowing letter.
Yes.
With a feather in your cap. That's a marvelous one.
Something like passing an exam.
Not only that, you see, you found out that you knew something. And you go around and speak in French to everybody.
Yeah,
that was
that's right. You didn't have to just speak French at a darn old school. You could speak it anywhere.
Oh yes, you know, you were complaining about all you were doing was you were just conjugating verbs. You were just doing those stupid things.
Now you see, Debbie, that is nice. That is something. Now you can recapture that.
That is.
Yeah.
That's.
Yeah. Now you see, you can do that in the past, perfect. That's the way I was. And you just now got it. Look how long it's taken. Well, I'm a damn Faye.
That's
look
charming.
How long it's taken. All the jogging. The shaking.
Oh, that's charming.
Yes. Well, you see, that's what means something. You don't want a bunch of goddamn information. You want to get to the heart of it. All these people and the pedigrees, and you see, you don't want all that stuff. You want it, you see, but that's not what that's not what you saw and what you felt at that time. That's so much more interesting. See, I know people have a extraordinary faculty for being dull a good part of the time.
Even just that little business of.
Excuse me.
You better get your raincoat.
I didn't drink at all. You're lucky.
I just don't understand how people be so dull so much of the time.
Well, they know how to be so charming.
Seems like they just push the right button.
How do you say we, Debbie?
So you say it and you suck in your breath. You don't say we out. You go like that and you suck it in. They were so afraid I wouldn't be able to say anything in French. See, Claude and Julian, when I went back in the summer,
oh, really?
They were scared silly that I wouldn't be able to say anything.
Yeah.
And that here they'd be stuck with me for a couple of days and they wouldn't know what to do because Claude speaks a little bit of English, but not very much.
Yeah.
And she was nervous about it. And she's nervous about speaking English, too. And so they were really scared. They were a little pale when they met the train.
Did you let them sweat a little?
No, I just started talking to them, and they just kind of relaxed visibly. And then they told me at dinner that they'd been really worried. And because they were afraid they wouldn't be able to talk to me. That's when I started puffing.
Do you write them?
Mm-hmm.
They write you?
In French.
You never show us anything, they say.
Ricord doesn't write very much. She's written to me a couple of times this year, but she doesn't write much.
But can't you get her to write a little bit more?
She just doesn't write. But none of them do. All the people that I write to in Europe don't answer me.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. They just don't write. I don't know whether it's that way everywhere. I mean, whether if they don't write in France or whether it's just because it's overseas or what.
Well, they've changed too. Long letters. God knows what happened to them. You know those sheets of cover the whole shebang, and then they turn it this way, and then they turn it this way.
Get all the kingdom in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's right. The people in Normandy were French, and they didn't speak English.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, what else are we talking about? The, let me see, I've forgotten. I mean, what are those other things we were talking about yesterday? The,
the food, the eating. We talked about a little bit. And, the thing about the woman and the Sisi. And we're laughing so much.
Yes, the laughter. Yeah. We haven't heard a thing about it.
Well, now that the business about the cake was the same thing. And we got so merry over that cake with we laughed.
And she did too?
Oh yeah. So it was her show. She got the cake for us.
Yeah.
The most awful cake I've ever eaten. You know, you don't think anything in France would taste bad, but boy, it was awful. It was just terrible, and we all I just gobbled it.
They cover up the ham. You smell it all over the place. Well, what do you know?
Oh, the other thing was in a Sisi. Being the only people there. That's what I think. Thinking about it now, that did. There were Phoebe and I, and there was this woman. We were sitting next to each other at tables. We were the only people in this enormous dining room. I mean, the dining room was as big as these two rooms in Mamu's room, at least, or the whole bottom of the house. It was huge. And there were three of us in there, sitting at little tables next to each other, and she never looked at us the whole time. She sat sideways to us, this woman, and looked out the window and didn't look at us. And we talked like this, you know, looking straight. She looking out the window. And Phoebe and I. Well, we'd tried out this new kind of Italian wine the night before. And so we decided, Phoebe said, do you want to get a bottle for dinner? And I said, yes. And neither one of us thought how big a bottle of wine was. A bottle of wine is about this big. And it came, and we just started drinking it, and she was having the same kind of wine. It's a specialty of the region, and so she was having the same thing. And so Phoebe asked her about the wine. Didn't she like the wine? Yes, she liked it. And we got started. Turned out she spoke English. Turned out she was from South Carolina. Not only spoke English, but she was an American. And so we just talked and talked. Well, Phoebe and I just were getting more and more expansive as we kept drinking more and more of this wine. And so we were telling her our whole life story. And she's sitting sideways to us, you know, we're over here, and she's looking out the window the whole time, not turning around to look at us. This woman from South Carolina. She said that she came to Assisi every year because she came to look at the Giotto frescoes in the basilica. Well, immediately we loved her. I mean, anybody that would do something like that, we just loved, you know. Anybody.
Just take her in.
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, Phoebe said, oh, wow, I'm an artist, she said. And we really let her have it. She didn't have to say anything else that she came to see these Giottos. And we just talked and talked and talked. We told her everything we'd done on our trip so far, and that was a lot because we'd been there 2 months. We told her the whole trip. We told her how we'd just been in Florence and that I was going to be in school in Nice and I was going to learn French and on and on and on and on and on and on. And through the whole meal, talking to her, Phoebe and I just both chattering away, she not saying anything. And finally, came time for dessert, and they had the most wonderful oranges in Italy that winter. They were really sweet, and they were red inside, and we ate them all the time because they were so good. So we all took an orange off the fruit tray, and we got to talking about oranges. Well, maybe I finished that bottle of wine.
Debbie?
The whole thing. And she got ready to leave, and she stood up and she said, well, she said to me something. Now, I wrote this down, and it's not this, that's not what she said. What she said was better, but it was something to the effect of, well, when you go back to Florida to your French school, you'll have to tell them about the oranges you had in Florence. Something like that. But she got everything all mixed up. The oranges, the school, where I was from, and French. You know, she remembered the main points, but she got them all mixed up. Only she did it very neatly. Well, Phoebe and I nearly died. And we started to laugh. You know how you laugh in church and you can't laugh out loud. We started to laugh like this, and we couldn't laugh out loud because she was standing right there. So we were just... We couldn't wait to get out of the dining room. We got back to our room and we just fell on our beds and just lay there like this, you know, just howled. I'm sure she was on the same floor as we were in the hotel. She heard us.
Oh, yes.
Just howled. We laughed so hard. We just laughed until we went to bed. We told her our whole life story and she hadn't listened to any of it. And here she was, she came to see the Jadas and she didn't listen.
Oh, crazy world.
We laughed so hard, and I remember the next morning Phoebe was a little upset. She thought maybe it was the bottle of wine. She hoped nobody'd heard us laughing like that.
But Henriette laughed too.
Yeah, we had. I remember we really had a gay time over that cake.
Yeah.
We really laughed over it.
Of course, you all hadn't had a bottle of wine. You couldn't laugh quite as.
No, but yeah. You know, we had a good time with it, and it was I think we were all honestly anticipating who was going to get the crown. We were really in the game. We all wanted to know who was going to get to be the wear the crown.
Well, you know, some of those functionaries can be right mellow. As I just read in the paper, I've never known any of them. And when they are, I suppose they can laugh and make the most of any of those situations. You like to think of them doing that.
I like the woman Dean in the rock band Coast.
But now, you had your Katie Ogden wasn't a great laugher.
Not quite the way my godmother is. Not quite. She's. It's hard to say. I can't think. I can't bring to mind any instances, any cases right now.
But her was her husband with her all the time?
Oh yes. Jim went along. I was saying the guy this afternoon that he's the only person I've ever known who was in a college quartet, and he'll still sing all the parts for you if you ask him.
Oh.
And I said to the guy that's kind of something that's
past
now. You know, people don't really take it seriously that you're going to sing in a quartet around the table at fraternity house. I mean, that's over now. But he'll still sing it all for you, and it's good natured. It's not particularly being stuck in tradition. It's just that he likes to sing.
Yeah.
That's all.
But
he was sort of twiddling his thumbs a little bit in France. He didn't quite know what to do with himself.
Yeah.
But he was a good sport. He certainly was.
Well, yeah, the days could be rather long, putting up with you all.
Well, Katie was just happy just to be there and read French newspapers and speak French all the time, you know. This was sort of her, almost like a business trip for her. She just liked the opportunity to be able to speak French. And
well, now, where did she speak her French?
Everywhere. I mean,
everywhere she went?
Yeah, I mean, she spoke beautiful French. Just beautiful. And I think she felt the same way I did about being able to speak French. You know, like I said at the end, when I was in Normandy, how you feel kind of puffed up because you're speaking French. And I really think she felt the same way, because every time she talked to somebody, they'd always compliment her on how well she spoke French. And you could just see her, you know. She really liked that. Well, she should. I mean, that's just fine that she did. But you could kind of see her. She'd kind of straighten up and brighten up, you know, because she spoke beautiful French. And she'd carry on long conversations with everybody, policemen and...
Oh, really?
No, everybody.
Oh, really?
Everybody.
Oh, she was a great talker then.
Well, in French, yes. I mean, she was practicing her French, and she talked to everybody. I mean, she wouldn't just say, you know, she wouldn't just ask for something and then run the way the rest of us did because we didn't know enough French.
Yeah.
She'd stay and talk to the people.
Yeah.
She'd really talk to them. She was the one, actually, I'm sure, who knew the Demiurges better than we did.
The
people who ran the hotel.
Yes.
She knew them the best. She'd go down and she could talk to Madame enough, you know, in passing, to be able to know things. But she talked.
So, another language makes you valuable.
Uh-huh. Especially when you... You go into it with the idea of talking. That's why she went in. I mean, she went really so that she could go and talk to Henriette. She wanted to go and have and talk to her a couple times a week or something like that, you know, just to practice her French.
And she did.
Didn't work out. No, she didn't as much as she wanted to. Henriette was too busy. But she saw quite a bit of her, but not as much as she'd hoped.
How long was she there?
4 weeks.
Oh, is that all?
To the month of January.
Oh, gee whiz. Well, that's no time at all, is it?
Not the way I stay places.
Well, now, that, of course, that proficiency, then... The other side of that is travel. Once you get that proficiency, the assumption is that you'll travel. And that's what you propose to do.
The French?
Hmm?
With the French? I guess so.
Oh,
hush.
Swear to goodness.
I suppose that's what... I don't know. I never thought of what I'd do once I spoke French. I suppose in the back of my mind was that I'd travel and speak French.
Just in the back of your mind?
Yeah. I did. You know, I went. After school was out, I traveled for a while.
Just a
little while. Yeah, not very long. I mean, I never thought about teaching French or anything
you
like that.
You would have carried that on another 6 months or easily.
Oh, easily.
Would like to have, wouldn't you?
Sure would have.
Well, what was the urgency?
I don't know.
Once you're there, your bills aren't high. Now, seems a long way back.
Yeah, a little.
You'd like to pick up right where you left off?
Well, it'd be different. Yeah.
I don't know why it should be so big different.
Well, I think it wouldn't be any different in my appetite for going, no. That would be exactly the same.
Why should it be so different?
Well, that's the wrong word, maybe, but I think I would be looking at maybe different things now.
Well, you'd just be looking at the same things, but just looking a little bit more.
Well, maybe that's what I mean to say.
I don't see any cause for radical change. You got the same elements there, the same occasions and all. And all you do is you're more proficient at them. It looks like it. You see, look how much you got back of you. Where I left off and without any misgivings whatever, Fee. Yes, see, this time you'd go to the theater and do things that you didn't get around to doing before.
We tried that once. We went to see.
Yeah.
Did I write you about that?
No.
We went to see a rehearsal of A Midsummer Night's Dream translated into French.
Yeah.
Just a disaster.
Yeah. Their pronunciations of Shakespeare would be disastrous too, I imagine.
Well, they wouldn't try to do it in English.
Well, I mean, their transliterations of it would be disastrous. Probably by Judy French.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what occurred to me, and I'd never seen it in this light before. Far from it. You see, Faye, that little Vienna hotel or something on the Loire that we stopped at on that trip around amongst the chateaux and castles. There was one of them I remember, and I forget whether we stayed there once or just there at one time or what. But it was obviously a little family affair, and just ready to give you all sorts of good things to eat. And there I was, you see, just a perfect killjoy. I didn't want any of that good old French food, you see. Here we go. Complications. And you see, there you have those public occasions just ready made for you. The food. And one of the other things that Debbie got into, the fashions, you see.
Yeah.
And any of the travel, of course, with your postcards and the people that Cashier put you in touch with, all of them. I'll tell you what it did. I worked this out when we were working on Mr. Weaver's hunting. What I saw in that was that for me, and it was for him too, but it would have been for me when I first came here in the 50s, if I could have got in on it then, before the highways got as fast as they are now. You see, he trains a dog here, and he picks up a dog here that somebody has lost. You remember that little thing, the part of it I added to it was that it was a way that you would enter into the countryside. I just transferred that to these these things that you ran into in France, and that'll take you into that other culture.
Hmm.
And you don't want to be a sourpuss, you see, and resist it. You want to go along with it. And with any of them, but I was saying in particular in France, if somebody could just sort of indoctrinated me at one time, I saw about as little about the country. I never ate out. I always ate at home.
Oh, Potty wouldn't have been pleased with you in Germany not to go to the guest house, or what is it, the beer hall. That's where everybody goes.
Yes, I went to the beer gardens and went to the concerts at the baths and ate cooking, but. But you see, there's so many, if you follow it, there's so many things that will take you into the culture.
It's just ready made.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just take you into it. All you gotta do is just stand there and not resist it. Great more in those things than I don't know how I missed it all last fall. Well, for one thing, I was just tolerating this. My attitude then was I was, you know, just moderately interested in it. But largely I was just interested in the fact that you could take hold and get into it so you could move on to something else. And so I didn't look at them too closely. And I'm not gifted at seeing everything just in a superficial look. If I get anything out of it, I have to dig it out. Now, I just, for supper this afternoon, I looked at this little one on the French fashion. Well, now, you see, you start off with the little boy and his feeling for the colors, you see. He gets a psychedelic blue and a big wired blue stripes in his shirt. Picks out his little boy. He picks out his own summer trousers, you see. Well, that looks like all she's interested in is just the clothing. But you see, there's a whole family affair in there of the wedding, see?
Mm.
And then she's got this other little piece she told me about the other day, of trying out the little inn where they were going to have the guests, huh?
Have the dinner after the wedding.
Yes.
Fireplace.
Yes, that fireplace thing. And you see, you stick that in, and you got what I'm thinking of. You see, the more sustained it is, the better. Now, if that is so big, you see, it'll disfigure the thing. That'll be different, but you wouldn't have to make it that big. But see, stick that in, you've got it more sustained. For what point, you see, if the point fit. I don't know. You're interested in the. I don't know just how it would fit. the connection you brought it up wouldn't fit your piece.
On the wedding.
Yeah. But you could figure it, and it'd be nice. So.
It's right exciting looking at these things.
Yeah.
Looking at them now, not.
Yeah.
Not just writing them out, but looking at them.
Yeah, you've got so much more in them than I realized. And the thing of it is, I can't see how I didn't see it at the time. You see, a person can blunder. Just blunders. And things are just perfectly obvious. Now, see, if it weren't for that, you see, I wouldn't spend time on what you're doing now. Those things have to be pretty substantial in order to support the things that you're doing now. See, you can you get your little piece at the start. It'll work out. You don't have to frame it for that now. And then I'll have a chance at the end to say a few little things. I think it'll look right nice. For one thing, some of these things we've said again and again. They're just going over them again. See, you had the experience. Experience had to be reported, and no one else would listen to you. You just accidentally found an audience. And you see, if it had been a little earlier, I couldn't have listened. If it had been a little later, I might have closed shop.
And now you'll have a little volume.
So you see, it's so much. Things happen. Well, we got to French, Faye. The French language opened up.
That's lovely.
Now, tomorrow you can take a running start on it.
Okay.
But I wouldn't try to, you know, put it in permanent form. Just approach it the best you can. I can't tell you.
That charming, she was so puffed up. So
I haven't seen what you did on. What have you got out there? And I haven't seen.
The business about the language, and Katie and Phoebe.
Yes. Well, you just related that, so I. But you still got it. Well. Yes. Yes. But you see, tonight you brought out so much more, and you brought in Henriette.
Well, I put that in.
Yes, but you still didn't put in the laughter.
Yes, I did.
Out there?
Uh-huh. That she had humor.
You didn't give a little picture of Katie Osborne when I'm talking to the policeman.
No, I haven't gotten that far yet. Oh, that's it.
Yes.
Everybody.
Now that doesn't determine your attitude when I saw you, when we saw you at Christmas, but it builds it up, doesn't it? Did you go around with her?
Well, I was with. I remember her talking to the policeman. I was with her then. We generally all went everywhere together, all four of us. Sometimes we didn't. Sometimes Phoebe and I would go, and Phoebe'd paint, and Katie and Jim would go somewhere by themselves. But usually we went all four together.
Where did you hear Katie talk French?
Well, that time to the policeman, we were on the beach somewhere. I've forgotten. We had gone to Saint-Tropez. We'd gone down the beach, and we were having a picnic on the beach. And Kay and I took a walk, and some police cars came up, and the policemen were sort of prowling around. And so we went up and talked to them. Kay did. She wanted to know why they were prowling around, and asked them. So they went into this long discussion of how cars are getting broken into on the beach, and you better be careful, you know. And Katie talked to them, wasn't it awful that cars are getting broken into, and on, and finally this policeman said, you know, well, madame, you speak very nice French. He said, are you foreign? He said. Well, she just, you know, she thought she might be French. Her accent was that good. You see, a Frenchman can detect a foreign accent with a Geiger counter. But her accent was good. She spoke very correct French, though. That's always an indication, too, if somebody speaks the language too correctly. Like me. No, not particularly.
I can't do English.
I never knew I spoke correct English. I was always the one with the worst grammar.
You just know.
I've told you. My godmother thinks I speak atrocious English. Even my grammar is terrible.
Does
she speak well?
She always gets all the, you know, the cases right, pronouns. I'm terrible about that. I'm always saying who instead of whom.
I never noticed that. Faye, it's past my bedtime. I'm sorry to say. I hate to be such a...
Yes, it just puts a damp on everything, yeah.
Just
everybody's ready to go in what you see.
Well, Debbie going in and read True Detective. True Romance.
I'm reading True Detective. I'm reading about Dorothy Parker, and it's delightful. She's a woman is so funny. Oh, golly. Some of the things she said were...
How'd she manage it? Was there any rhyme or reason into what she said? Point of view?
Well... This biographer says that she really did speak for that era better than a lot of people think she did, he feels. He said that so many of her short stories, they irritated people because she had such an ear for the way people talked. She could, that it was more than fiction, it was true. And she ridiculed the New York society that, you know, that she went around in, and people didn't like her to do that. It upset them, all her friends, and she was just making fun of them all the time. He said that one of her friends said that her perception was just so much greater than everybody else's, and it was hard on her. It made her unhappy. She had a very miserable life, really, because she lived in this sort of glittery society, and she knew it was all phony, and she knew that everybody else didn't know it was phony. But the early years when she and Robert Benchley and all those people were at the Algonquin really must have been fun. She said when they first started going, she and Benchley and Stewart, somebody, Robert Stewart and Robert Benchley. And the three of them worked for Vanity Fair, and they were the ones that first started going to the Algonquin. They'd just go there for lunch. And it was right next to some music hall, and there was this troupe of midgets that worked in the music hall, and the midgets used to attack Mr. Stewart. they would come out and they'd run after him and they'd hang on his trousers and he'd walk along and there'd be all these midgets behind him. So he used to get Dorothy Parker and Robert Benchley to protect him from the midgets so that he could go to lunch. She said, we spent the first year protecting Mr. Stewart from the midgets. Oh. And she always, everything she said was just sort of under her breath. Just so that it wasn't really like she was saying it to anybody. She said, well, she just sort of muttered it. She said, well, a girl's best friend is her mother. Everything she said was so clever. This movie star, this well-known movie star, went to London and fell down and broke her leg, and Dorothy Parker said, oh, she must have done it sliding down a barrister. another time, that she was always really mean about people who weren't there, and everybody was afraid of her. They wouldn't leave the room because she'd say something mean. So one time they were all talking about this woman who just could do everything. I mean, just everything she could do. She could speak 10 languages and all these things she could do. And the men were all talking about it while Dorothy Parker was sitting there, and she didn't like it. And so she said, "Yes." Just amazing what that woman can do. She speaks 10 languages and she can't say no in any of them. It's really funny.
Daddy.
What was the year of the Argonne? 20s?
The 20s. The really early 20s. I think in 1919 they started.
Right after the war.
Mm-hmm. Well, and during the war, because that's when she first worked for Vanity Fair, during the war. And then they worked for... I guess it was just all Vanity Fair, and they fired Dorothy Parker from Vanity Fair because she was the drama critic and she panned a play, and the producer called up and said, you better fire that woman. And so they fired her, and Robert Benchley and Robert Stewart walked out and quit too the same day. And they used to, she and Robert Benchley, I mean, I think the Vanity Fair years must have been the best ones for her. She said, she just said that they really had fun. And she and Robert Benchley used to subscribe to Undertaker's magazine, and they'd have all these charts about where you'd shoot the embalming fluid in, and she used to hang them around the office until the man who published the magazine told her that she really couldn't do that anymore. She better take them down.
Helen Jones, talking about Dorothy Parker. Helen Jones said that she was judging a student day performance several years ago, and she didn't know Gerson Yes, and she'd never seen him. Helen looked so like Andy Gump when she was telling this, and she said, I didn't know who Gerson Yes was, and if I had, I wouldn't have cared, really. But anyway, he was the president of the whole state organization, and he's the dean of music there at the music school in Jacksonville. And he had a student playing in this thing, and he was doing the second piano part. And Helen said, I wrote on the sheet, I gave the student an excellent instead of a superior. And I wrote on the sheet, the student does fair and would have done better if the second piano hadn't been so obnoxious. And we had just passed Gerson Yes, and on the steps, and he always speaks to me very, very warmly, but I was with Helen. He's very cool. Passed by, and Helen didn't have to tell us this, what had happened. She said, he's never really spoken to me since. I didn't know who he was. Wouldn't have mattered. Dorothy Parker could have handled it. She said, Helen says I didn't have to say obnoxious. I could have said just a little loud. She said, he played the solo and the steward just sort of trembled. I thought I'd die. Take me to France again.
Yeah. That's a good bit, isn't it? Now, you see, I said we were talking about the freedom you have, the immunity you have when you travel, and you said it works both ways, that the country has immunity to them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's right, nice. I wouldn't let it rest on fried eggs, though. I'd take it through a good number of things. At least I wouldn't leave it with that. See, you've got a whole lot of stuff there that you can cite. Now, I don't mean to suggest that you change any way that you're doing the things. I mean, because you know I didn't make any suggestions on that last fall, and I still don't make any suggestions because you handle those things nicely.
Channel 2 right, and the end of around 1516, and the end of the Debbie's reporting this Sunday after supper, the 4th of November, 73. Channel 2 right around 1600, and the end of Debbie's report on laughter and all in the French reporting of last fall, 1972. This Sunday after supper, the 4th of November, 73.